now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this is The Ruck, the only rugby podcast that's actually better when there's no rugby on. The country might still be in lockdown, but that hasn't stopped the RFU from extending Eddie Jones's contract to 2023. Is that the right decision for the England team? Newcastle now know that they've been promoted back to the Premiership. But how and when are they going to get this season finished? And more importantly than all of that, have my co-hosts Owen Slott and Stephen Jones been sticking to self-isolation? Or have they been caught in Richmond Park having a barbecue with 20 of their other hack mates, jack mates?
Slotty, I thought of you when I saw those pictures in Richmond Park. Yeah, that's right near your place, that is.
Jonesy, the last week, I mean, obviously things have gotten very serious now. You know, people are clearly not the minority of people are not listening to the social distancing policy. Boris Johnson has been taken into hospital, and you know, it just generally feels like, what are we now at the end of week two of lockdown? I mean, I'm assuming you know, you're safely tucked away and adhering to all the rules as you always do.
I am. The only thing, I can't go shopping because I can never find anything in supermarkets or anything like that, so they don't send me anyway. But listen, the thing is with it, it's when you say, oh, great, you know, only 640 people died yesterday, it's less than the day before, then you think, blimey, that is absolutely, absolutely shocking. You feel so bad for people who are in isolation, people who can't even be with their loved ones in their last moments. And you feel so terrible for anyone, you know, I was going to say rugby fans, for anybody who's on their own. And, you know, you just hope and pray that one day soon all the figures will start dropping and we'll get back to normal. But the price that people have paid has been just enormous, and feel really bad for them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Owen, we had an address from Her Majesty the Queen yesterday. I mean, obviously, it never takes much.
Did you get your own private address, or was that just the one for the whole of the nation?
Well, as you know, it never takes much to get me emotional, and I was moved actually by not only, I mean, she speaks so eloquently, obviously, but more importantly, you know, the sentiment, the views, the words she expressed, you know, summing up the spirit of World War II, etc. I mean, it was pretty moving stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not much of a royalist myself, and I married into a family that likes to watch the Queen's speech on Christmas Day. And to be quite honest, as far as I'm concerned, that I could miss every single one of them. But I was very glad I watched yesterday's, and I did find it very moving, and I did think it was probably an important thing for lots of people. It summed up how lots of people were feeling, and it gave people a bit of hope. Yes, her script writers, whoever they were, got it spot on, really. And just to clear up, Lawrence, I haven't been in Richmond Park because actually we've had a little corona kid in my family. Our 16-year-old had it a bit last week. He's actually fine now, but the result is that we've got the 40-day isolation now.
Oh.
And we're allowed out for a walk and stuff, but we can't go into any of the shops, and certainly don't go near other people. And so there's this sort of limited fun down this end of my street. Though we did have a Grand National sweepstake in our street. We had a bunch of different houses competing, and my horse fell at the third or something. So that was pretty much the highlight of the week for me.
Well, nothing changes there, Slotty. You didn't manage to pick the winner then.
Lawrence, what I don't like is this thing that you've got to keep your own views on the royal family or the lack of royal family and your views on politics. You've got to keep them to the fore when you're discussing 700 people dying and things like that. Someone who shall be nameless, we can call him Stuart Barnes, started extrapolating that Corbyn would have done better in managing the coronavirus shambles than the current government. It's absolute rubbish, and only in the sense that you can't break it down on lines like that. And also, Her Majesty the Queen, I actually, my family are quite fond of it. Me too. I quite like listening to her. But the idea that just because you hate the monarchy, you should decry what she said yesterday is total rubbish. What? It's utter rubbish.
No, well, first of all, the political point scoring is, you know, now is not a time to start doing that at all. I mean, obviously Labour have announced a new leader. And he's busy, you know, putting together his cabinet and perhaps trying to be a conscience to the, you know, to the current government in this crisis. But you do feel that people should put that politics to one side and just move forward in the right way. And, you know, I just thought, just going back to the Queen's speech, you know, to have someone who'd actually addressed the nation in unprecedented times in 1940 with her sister, you know, to do that again in 2020 is just quite extraordinary. So I think if anyone who's got that kind of experience to summon the necessary spirit, you know, to give everyone the necessary lift, regardless of what race, religion, political persuasion you are, I think is magnificent. Guys, I mean, just talking, you know, in slightly more down-to-earth terms now, is there anything that you, from the real world, that you really started to miss? Jonesy, I was fascinated to learn that you're not missing rugby as much as maybe some of us are, that you were damaged in some ways by some of the things that have happened over the last, I don't know, 6 to 12 months in rugby anyway. And, you know, just tell us a little bit about that.
Do you know what? It's when you look around, you know, we've been doing these jobs a fair time. You've been involved. We've all been involved since we were kids in rugby in some way. Rugby never, ever progresses, you know. We've been talking about Tier 2 for absolute decades. They're still in exactly the same place. The self-interest from between each union is unbelievable. I think we're in the lowest, just when we needed brilliant leadership. I think that we really lack brilliant leaders. And to be honest with you, there is so little common ground. There's so little spirit whereby you absorb the needs of others as well as your own. It just gets me down. I mean, I love rugby. I love the community game. I love my friends. And I love speaking about rugby with you guys. But anyone who thinks it's all going to be sweetness and light when it comes back, is I'm afraid it won't be.
And Owen, anything you've particularly missed? I mean, assuming you've allowed your wife to cut your hair rather than, I mean, obviously that's not a conversation I need to have. I get my son just to run the shaver over mine.
That's a bit of a compliment to me, Lawrence. You suggest that that I've got enough that could require a haircut, so I'll go on with that. Yeah, you bitter man, you. Yes, I miss other people, really.
Yeah,
I've got a great mate, Gareth, who lives next door to me, who'll be listening to this later, and we can meet for a beer over the fence, and it's one of the best parts of the day or the week. We've done it a couple of times. I stand on my raised beds, and he sits in his garden on the other side, and we're roughly about 5 meters apart. Normally we'd be going to the pub on a Friday night with you know, 5-10 other sort of local mates or whatever. I miss all that. I mean, everyone must be feeling that way. You know, human beings, we're born of a social bent, particularly people who listen to this and like rugby. It's a part of the territory, isn't it? And I think we're probably, a lot of people are discovering that we're quite resilient. We're also probably discovering quite quickly that the little cracks that can appear in lovely family relationships.
Yeah, very much so.
But yeah, it's society. You know, society's stopped. We become little tiny units and it's hard and it's testing for everyone. And I just hope some people will find that test ludicrously hard to endure. And I just hope that the very large majority get through it the other side in one piece.
One phenomenon of this time And you could say, I would say this, but newspapers have suddenly come back into fashion in the sense that, you can't really spend time going out to pick them up. No, our newspapers, the Times and Sunday Times, we've got much bigger sales and a lot of home deliveries because you can now choose to have it at home. And our digital numbers have gone off the scale. So, and also I feel sort of closer to readers over that and the way people write in to attack what we said or praise what we said and also online. I think newspaper readers and the journalists are closer than they've ever been during this coronavirus outbreak.
I mean, I think it's obvious to say, but clearly when you take away the here and now, which is what this virus has done, you know, we can't celebrate our, you know, every day. You know, there's this kind of nostalgic look back across all sorts of things about where the world was, you know, last week, last month, last year, 10, 15, 20 years ago, particularly for sport. And obviously there's discussions about looking forward, but some of the things that I've really enjoyed is you know, turning on the TV at the odd time just to look back at some particularly rugby's kind of classic matches. Really, I spent the best part of one day last week giving a new commentary to a couple of games that I'd played in the two European finals 2004, 2007 against Toulouse and Leicester. And just look at the way the game was played back then.
Did you win the games the second time as well?
I think we won them more emphatically the second time. I mean,
if you'd have gone back to the 1999 World Cup, you'd have won that, and certainly the 2007 World Cup final.
Oh, no. Listen, I've erased those from my memory bank. Trust me, they didn't exist. that's the only way you do it. Now, I mean, it's a slight vanity project, but it was a project that BBC Sport wanted to do, and as I said, I had a tremendous amount of enjoyment in being able to do that, even albeit from the office in my own room. Listen, gents, I don't want to move away from the gravity and severity of the corona situation and what we find ourselves trying to deal with day to day, but I do want to talk about rugby and some of the things that have happened over the last few days. Eddie Jones has signed a new contract. Do you think Bill Sweeney, the RFU chief executive, one, has made the right decision? And two, you know, the timing of his announcement.
It's very, very odd, you know, because when these big posts come up, Lawrence, you think, oh, you know, this bloke's got to go, he's got to go. And then you suddenly think, well, who's going to be there instead? And actually, frankly, I mean, their last game, but two or three, was a World Cup final. So, look, I have no problem with Eddie being reappointed. I think if there had been a brilliant candidate out there who was desperate to do it, I maybe I wouldn't have thought that, but... You know, it is so that there was a heading in the Times the other day that his tenure is a roller coaster. And it has been, but we don't actually want a roller coaster. When you won the one in 2003, there was no roller coaster. You just won for the last 2 years before the tournament. And he gets so much wrong. He gets so much wrong in selection. The team is prepared brilliantly 1 week and badly the next week. And basically, he insults people. Now, he can put all that right. And he's got three or a bit years to do it. Under that criteria, I'd welcome him back, but I think he's got to do better.
I mean, you know, it's funny, isn't it? When you have press conferences that are very bland and very boring, you know, we all crave the days when Clive Woodward and he were sort of throwing grenades, you know, out there for everyone to digest. And Terry Cooper was at the front of the press conference asking the questions that people really wanted to hear. And then when the odd bit of controversy does pop up, we're quick to jump down Eddie Jones's throat. So where's the balance there then?
You've got to the nub of an issue that we in the media have been struggling with, or not struggling with, but yes, Eddie as a subject to write about has been second to none, really, for the last 4 years. Never a dull moment, barely ever a dull press conference. When he doesn't want to say anything, it's because he's grumpy and he's trying to make a point. I mean, it's, you know, he is a fascinating personality within the sport. When he does say things and get his pitch wrong, we are obliged to say so. That's the job. But at the same time, if he was to go, then we would be losing a lot of colour off the back pages. So we'd have to deal with that. One thing you mentioned, Lawrence, about the timing of the announcement is that I was slightly surprised that that when the announcement was made on Thursday last week, that there were some people going, oh, it was distasteful to announce something like this at this time. And now I think it's right that we're all being very sensitive about what news and what is out there and what's celebrated and what's worth celebrating at the time. But I just didn't have a problem with that. The RFU been in the process of reappointing him, as we know, ever since early November after the last World Cup final. It was sort of inevitably going to happen. And I didn't really see why it was such a bad thing, that there is a terrible thing happening to our country and to the planet at the moment. But I didn't see a problem in releasing this news and giving people something else to talk about and think about for a while, which is effectively what we're doing on this podcast, isn't it?
No, listen, I totally agree. Look, Eddie Jones's record is the highest. He's had the most success in the history of any England coach. And as you say, Stephen, unless there was a glaringly obvious candidate to even rival him, you know, this I think it's a really, really good decision. I've got no problem with the timing of it. I think now what we do need to see is Eddie Jones given everything he needs to take that next step and make, you know, this England team one of the best that's ever been. But also, I think the RFU and Conor O'Shea, you know, and I'm sure that they will be thinking about this, need to get a really proper succession plan in place, because what we don't want to do is get to the World Cup in 2023, win it, which is what, you know, we managed to do in 2003, and then fall off a cliff the following week. So, you know, please, please, please start putting together a succession plan, RFU. You know, don't just sit and be proud of the fact that we've reappointed Eddie Jones, who's a brilliant coach and a good man, and now start to think about the future. And that's one thing I'd really, really ask for.
Lawrence, can I ask you one? I'd love your opinion on this thing, because Jones, you mentioned it before, and for me, it's the bit that I don't quite get with Eddie is this consistency thing. Eddie's very quick after England have had a defeat or a bad performance to say, oh, it's my fault, I got the preparation wrong. And that's just kind of like a trick to take pressure off the team, etc. And it's kind of, I kind of ignore that. But I do find it strange that England under Eddie have had so many wins, a lot of very big victories. But then every now and again, they'll come out and they'll just be way off it. They'll be brutally exposed. The World Cup final is the most obvious one. And can you as a former player who played under lots of different coaches, can you accept that as just part of the sporting life, that sometimes it doesn't go right? Or do you look at Eddie's reign with England and go, well, probably happening too often, or maybe it's happened so many times it won't happen again? What do you make of all that?
Well, I mean, statistics are misleading sometimes. I mean, England have had this sort of incredible consistency, and they have won things. And let's not move away from that. They've won a Grand Slam. They've won a title. The apex of their success under Eddie Jones, and you've got to remember, when he took over, they were rock bottom. They were the first team not to qualify in their own World Cup into the knockout stages. And he made a pretty immediate impact. The apex of that success was the Grand Slam, and then the wonderful 3-0 whitewash in Australia of the Australian team. And I think since then, they've never quite managed to... I mean, they've had some wonderful victories. You know, I think about the performance in Ireland in the Six Nations, and the one in the World Cup against New Zealand, probably two of the best five performances I've ever seen from any England side, bar none. But they've not managed to sort of reach that apex again in terms of the way that they play. So I know we hear a lot from Eddie Jones. What troubles me a little bit is we don't hear enough from the senior players. And by that, I mean, you know, the strong, forthright opinions of those players, which clearly they have. And I'm sure that they discuss these games in quite a lot of detail behind closed doors. But I'd love to hear Owen Farrell or Amaro Itoje or Jamie George come out, you know, after those games and say, look, this isn't good enough from this England team. You know, that was unacceptable in terms of our defeat. And it's nothing wrong with criticising yourself publicly, because I think what it does is it sends a message to the rest of the squad and to the whole country that you understand that there are consequences of defeat. We can accept that these defeats happen the odd occasion. You know, I've been involved in several of them. But on a regular basis, you have to move the team forward. And look, I think by and large, we are doing that. And I think it is the right decision. And, you know, I'm quite happy that it's been announced. Just
can I just pick up your point there, which I totally agree with? This England team, if ever an England team in any sport could ever be anonymous, this lot are anonymous. And I feel sorry for the individuals. I mean, I'm sorry to keep on going back to your guys, but you had 15 massive, huge characters in the team. And there are characters in this team, but Eddie is dominating the media so much. They're so terrified of anyone else saying. You've got people like Maro Itoje, bright blokes that we never hear from. And it is they who should be setting much more of a tone.
Yeah, I mean, there are those that will argue with me that say, look, rugby players are just there to win rugby matches. But I do think that there is a connection that can be made between the players, the absolute superheroes of this generation, and the fans themselves.
Of course,
and rugby's not a sport that naturally lends itself to creating that. It's not like football where, you know, the fans sing passionately about what they think about their players. So, you know, I do feel that the more you hear from senior players in the group, the Farrells, the Itojis, the Jamie Georges, the Elliot Dennys, whoever they might be, the more that they build that connection with the fans, and particularly at times like now, but equally moving forward as well. And to speak to fans in the good times when you've just won, but also in the bad times as well, when you might have lost. And I do feel that I'd love to see the next chapter of Eddie Jones, maybe just a little bit more of that front window being shared by the players, because ultimately they're the ones that are going to go out on the field and do it for England.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Gents, one team that is moving forward, we now know, is Newcastle. They win the championship. The RFU confirmed the final positions in the championship, and of course they confirm Newcastle's promotion to the Premiership. I mean, what does everyone think about? It's not just the championship, but also it's up and down the land. They've come up with a mathematical formula, and naturally, and rather unfortunately, there's some winners and losers. I mean, do you think by and large that was the right thing to do, and it's kind of been handled in the right way? I mean, you do need an exit strategy, and it would appear that they've come up with something that is clearly not going to keep everyone happy, but it's probably the right thing.
Well, they could have just called the season. They could have called the season off basically and said no premiership and no promotion relegation. We'll carry on. We'll start again next season. But I think that would have been wrong, and that would have been very hard on Newcastle in particular. So I think they had to do something, and I can't really see any problem with the way they worked it out. So I tell you one thing that I thought was pretty interesting about the outcome is Yorkshire Carnegie got relegated from the championship, which was inevitable. At the same time, Rotherham got relegated from National 1 to National 2. And that void of proper rugby in Yorkshire, or professional rugby in Yorkshire, is just looking worse and worse and worse. And they've Yorkshire still got Doncaster in the championship, but that is all that's left. Very worrying.
Lads, the thing is, it is a clumsy way of doing it. It's bringing a huge drawbridge down with a clunk. It's very clumsy. And the teams I feel sorry for are you know, obviously the teams who've led or they've done really well throughout the season in every league, but there are always some who come late, either because they deliberately timed it and there is no capacity for someone to come late. I think they've gone slightly too early. It's stupid saying, yeah, we're going to come back on the 15th of August, but they could have waited and waited and until they knew genuinely, until the health authorities have said, yeah, you will be able to come back that day and just see how many games they could get in. I feel sorry for so many clubs. The Premiership is different, but again, I think there's anomalies there too. It is a clumsy, horrible way of doing it, but I have to say, I can't really think of a better one.
Just moving on to the Premiership, I mean, clearly there's no certainty really around what's happening across any sport. I see the Premier League have just suspended more fixtures in football, quite understandably. I guess we're no closer to knowing really how the Premiership season might end. Whilst people are losing their lives, quite clearly the safety and the lives of people are absolutely paramount. Sport is secondary. But are we any closer to knowing how the Premiership season might end? There's been talk in the Pro 14 about exploring just an idea that when we do get back to some sort of normality, there's just one playoff, the top of Group A against the top of Group B, which would be Leinster against Edinburgh final. I mean, any thoughts, chaps, on the Premiership? I mean, it's been, there's been talk about maybe holding triple headers behind closed doors with no fans and film them remotely. But it's not an easy situation for any governing body to find themselves in.
It's very difficult, Lawrence. And the thing is, again, we don't know when the lads can start playing again. We do not know that. We can't even guess it. But also then, you see, you're coming up immediately the summer goes along. You're coming up with these imperatives of playing test matches down under from impoverished unions. So you haven't got an awful lot of time. And what I would do is just for now, just hold out, give it another, say, 3 weeks and see if we can actually plot a time when they could start again. Because I think really to make it a more of a bona fide competition, you do want to play as many games as you can in the season. And I do think, you take somewhere like, you could say, well, let's take off the top four, just have semis in the final. But again, I mean, currently at the moment, if you look at it, Northampton in fourth place, really not playing well at all. Worcester in fifth place, going like a bomb. Now, if there's one more game in the league, Worcester may well be in fourth. And you get so many anomalies then. So I just think they ought to leave it 2 or 3 weeks, just see if they can find a starting date after that.
And Owen, you know, we've seen that the RFU, with their various announcements with Eddie Jones, with all the leagues, Championship, etc., what they haven't done thus far is they haven't cancelled any summer tours just yet, and they've got one eye on the autumn internationals, and they must be hoping and praying, you know, that they'll still go ahead. But I mean, do you see any international rugby happening across the summer if we were to get things back to some sort of level of normality, or do you just think that the knock-on effect is that everyone just has to perhaps think about the collective rather than their own, you know, their own individual situation?
There's been quite a lot of talk between all the nations about what to do now. What I'm told is that Southern and Northern Hemisphere are coordinating better than ever, if you like, because we all need each other more than ever now. It's there have been times in the past where the Northern Hemisphere have been basically sticking two fingers up to the South, saying, you know, we want to become big and strong and we're not necessarily out here to help you. Well, we can't do that on our own up here anymore. As you say, in England, the RFU, they need those big Twickenham games. Same for all the games going on at the other Celtic nations. So some kind of a solution has to be found out that works out for everyone. I mean, what are the chances of England going to Japan in July or Ireland to, was it Ireland to Australia and Wales to New Zealand, I think. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not quite sure quite how lucrative those games are. So the Southern Hemisphere needs to be prioritising getting their season back. And then we've got to get some kind of an autumn or December programme or whatever it is. The game needs it in every respect. Just but primarily, if that's not the wrong word, but the game needs it for that economic shot in the arm, because without those big Twickenham games, the RFU are well down, and so is everyone.
World Rugby are, quite rightly probably, they're targeting two nations who are in real trouble. One is the US, who filed for bankruptcy. The other one is Australia, who've been really struggling for ages. But it is slightly odd that the worse your performance has been, the more access you have to funds. I mean, the Australian Rugby Union made such a disastrous mess up of everything down there. They just signed another contract to go in Super Rugby, which none of the players, none of the coaches wanted. And it's strange that sometimes you reward people who've not done very well. But on the other hand, we do want to keep Australia and the USA going. But I'm sorry, maybe I'm slightly cynical here, but I think that this great new bonhomie, as soon as people get around the table and demand home internationals, I think that new sense of spirit of togetherness will go straight out the window.
Now, Inge, you share that sense of, slightly cynical view that people are talking a good game now, but maybe when things get back to normal, they're just that self-interest will take over.
Sorry, I stopped listening for a little bit there.
That's quite all right. We were very boring anyway, so there was nothing we were adding of significant value.
The reason I did that is I'm just reading this an interview. I was trying to get hold of this beforehand that Bernard Laporte's given to Midi Olympique this morning. We should maybe finish by discussing it a little bit. Because he's saying for weeks, so we know Bernard Laporte's running with Bill Beaumont to be VP, to Bill Beaumont's president in the next round of elections for World Rugby. And he says in this interview, for several weeks I've been working with Bill Beaumont on the restructuring of the International Canada and create a new window dedicated to clubs which would allow the creation of new international competition, the Club World Cup. This will be included in our manifesto, which should be sent this week to all the federations. That's quite good, isn't it?
Just what we needed in a schedule where it's absolutely locked up tight and it's tighter than the tin of sardines. Just what we wanted is another competition. Well done, Bernard.
I'm just reading the interview here. So the questioner says, well, what about the European Cup? And Bernard Laporte says, it would disappear, that's for sure. We don't want to overload the calendar. He says, European competition is magnificent. With Toulon, I was able to lift the trophy three times. I know what it can represent. But let's be frank, it does not generate enough income.
For a tournament that's just celebrating its 25th anniversary, you know, I'm often asked, you know, what are the games that, and I know this isn't a financial question, and that's what he's alluding to. It's more around the finances, but there is no doubt that the games that myself, and I'm sure I've spoken to many colleagues and peers around the world, that the games that I've played in that competition are, without doubt, the games that I remember for the rest of my life. And I include the Rugby World Cup final, and I include any British and Irish Lions tours in that. So, having reflected, you know, over the weekend on some of the games, and there'll be more of the great, you know, tussles between Leinster and featuring some of the other Toulouse, some of the other great names, Leicester. You know, I'd be horrified if that tournament was just carted to one side for the sake of money. That's for sure.
But Lawrence, what about the other option that you're being offered here of a club World Cup?
There's lots of good ideas being promoted. I mean, now the Nations Cup that the World Rugby were looking into very seriously, and the money was on the table to get that off the ground. I mean, that probably retrospectively now looks like a pretty good idea, doesn't it, really? I mean, what that would have done maybe is redistribute the funds more equitably around the world, and you wouldn't have this kind of anomaly that exists with the Pacific nations, et cetera, et cetera. But listen, there's lots of very good ideas. And I'm just sort of thinking back to having Mark Evans on our podcast a little while ago. There's no doubt that there's conversations going on behind closed doors over the phone around what the future of rugby might look like. But we do need, the game does need to stop for a second, reset itself. And I think financially, it's living beyond its means. Now, a lot of people might say, well, every sport does that. But just if I look at just what happens in this country, it does need to reset itself, and it does need to get a grip in terms of the direction it's heading in. So, it's certainly an interesting debate. Jonesy, I wanted to finish with I mean, there's been lots of news stories across rugby in the last couple of weeks, but one that stuck out for me, Dougie Morgan, the former Scotland and Lions scrum half, died at the age of 73. He played in two test matches in the 77 Lions series against the All Blacks, also coached Scotland for a couple of years, having been part of the team that won the Grand Slam. I mean, there's no one better on this particular podcast to look back someone like that than your good self. So just a quick tribute to Dougie Morgan, if you would.
First of all, he's a lovely fella, really talented, because a little bit like Laidlaw, but possibly a bit quicker. He could play the all-round scrum half game, but he's also an excellent kicker. He's a really lovely bloke. He was a worthy Lion. He came in an era when they had Scotland had these raw-boned rucking forwards, Lawrence, and with Dougie at the base of them, he was just tremendous. And whenever anyone goes, you always say what a lovely guy he was. He was a genuine lovely guy, and I remember him mostly for he made an incredible decision once in the Scotland game. Scotland were sort of one of the favourites to win the Five Nations, it would have been then. In their first game, they were trailing by 3 points with, I think, something like 2 minutes to go. And then Scotland got a kick in front of the posts. And Morgan has decided, rather than take the draw that was there, obvious there, and it really was. I mean, I could have put it over my left foot. It was so easy. They carried on playing, and I think they took a tap penalty, and they didn't then draw the game. And it was a huge debate, and Scotland followers, they came down on both sides of the argument. I just thought it was a sort of heroic gesture, the sort of thing you might have done in the 1920s. I mean, imagine doing that now. You know, you'd probably still take the draw every time. So I remember him, Dougie Morgan, doing that, and it just seemed to me that he was a free spirit in the way he did it.
Wonderful. Guys, is there anything else we want to discuss?
Yeah. It's very sad, really. Stuart Barnes, our colleague, has completely gone. He's lost it now. He's gone bonkers. When Barnsley was playing for Bath, the most hateful thing in the world, and thing he detested and almost refused to play in it, was the divisional championship between North West, London and Midlands. Barnsley hated it. He reviled it. He's made fun of it ever since, still hating it. It had crowds of about an average of about two men and a dog. This morning in the Times, he's declared that this was the way we should have gone all along. This is a man who won 22 titles with Bath. He now wants the divisional championship. So, Slotty, we should send someone round there, psychiatrist, and just make sure the poor old lad is still going.
Honestly, he's struggling with the isolation a bit, you reckon?
Well, I think he is. I mean, he ought to be in isolation after the virus has gone, if he's coming out with that rubbish.
Jonesy, he's obviously had the same attack that you had when the Saracen story broke. So clearly, you can recommend someone to help him a little bit, really. So
give me 2 or 3 weeks, and I'll be returning to the story. Don't worry.
Lawrence, you poked the old bear there, mate.
Well, I know. My thanks to Owen Scott and Stephen Jones. We will continue to make The Ruck every Monday for as long as we possibly can. Stay safe, everyone. Stay well. Have as happy an Easter as you can. And we'll be back next week.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.